If you're looking for a podcast to give you tips on how to quickly thaw out your Thanksgiving turkey when you forgot to take it out 3 days ago like you were supposed to.
Oh, in that case, your host, buddy.
Pretty
Sorry.
Much, here's the only tip I can think of. Get a time machine. But this isn't that podcast.
No, it's not.
This is, however, comedy.
Tragedy.
Marriage. The largest container of hot water you can find and put it in there. That's about the only thing I can suggest.
Depending on how big your bird is, you're still maybe out of luck. You should be starting to, you know, stuff if you stuff, which, you know, I'm not a stuffer.
Mom always stuffed.
Did she really?
Yeah, as well as making the
pan of dressing?
Yeah.
I don't think I ever knew that your mom was a stuffer.
Well, maybe by the time you came along,
she wasn't
cut
stuffing
back on
anymore.
That.
I don't know.
Anyway.
Or maybe I was so traumatized by it, I just blocked it out.
By the way, this is Comedy Tragedy Marriage,
hey,
a podcast where a longtime married couple takes turns each episode selecting a movie, documentary, or TV show to watch. We watch it together, and then we sit down and discuss why we liked it, loved it, or loathed it, and share that discussion with you. I am Stan the Movie Man. I review films at stanthemovieman.com when I get around to seeing one.
Yeah, well, when something decent opens.
There's some interesting things out right now, but I just haven't had the opportunity or the desire to, you know, get cleaned up and go to the movie theater.
There you go.
You can follow me on Twitter at Movie Man Stan. You can follow the podcast at CT Marriage. I am also over on Blue Sky and Threads and Spoutable, all at Stan the Movie Man. If you have a question or anything you'd like to ask us, you can send that to us via an email, you know, that old 20th century way of communication.
Whatevs.
You can send that to comedytragedymarriage@gmail.com. You can also send suggestions for something you think we should watch to that email address as well. And you can also leave us any questions or suggestions by clicking the link in the description of this episode. It will give us a voice message of your lovely dulcet tones. Joining me, as always, is my significant other half,
Maud the Last Broad.
Well, you're the last broad I went on a date with, so.
Actually, I don't think that's quite the truth. I think before we were Steady Freddies, you maybe took out another girl once or twice, maybe? But I'm the last one you remember, and that's good. Oh, your brains are hurting now, I can tell.
There's a little
squirrel
steam
on the wheel,
yeah,
running around in there.
I think we're wearing him out. I don't remember. Anyway, it was my choice this week.
It was.
As to the movie to select, and I came to this in a couple of ways. First, we had been watching Moonlighting on Hulu, the show from the mid to late 80s about the detective agency where a former supermodel has lost all of her money because of her crooked business manager. And she has these various holdings that include this detective agency. That's all she's got left. All these various businesses were purchased because they were losing money and she could use them as tax write-offs. That stars Cybill Shepherd. And she is one of the stars of this week's movie, The Last Picture Show. It is from 1971. It is directed by Peter Bogdanovich. It is a semi-autobiographical story from the novel of the same name by Larry McMurtry. And it stars Timothy Bottoms, Jeff Bridges, Cybill Shepherd, as mentioned, Ben Johnson, Cloris Leachman, Ellen Burstyn, Eileen Brennan, Clue Gulager, and Sam Bottoms, Randy Quaid.
Oh,
this
right.
thing has Ooh. A stacked cast.
Yeah.
Some of whom were unknown when, or actually most of them were unknown when the movie came out. Another thing that led me to this film was recently the Criterion Collection has done a 4K restoration of the film that I believe they're releasing on Blu-ray.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I saw that story, and then the connection between this movie and Sybil Shepherd and mm-hmm. Moonlighting, and it all led me to select The Last Picture Show. Movie was nominated for 8 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Director, Best Supporting Actor, and Best Supporting Actress. Actors Ben Johnson and Cloris Leachman won for Best Supporting Actor and Actress for their roles in the film.
Well deserved.
And it is the story of a small town. Anarene. Is that how you pronounce
Anarene,
it?
Anarene, Texas.
Anarene, Texas. The town is dying.
Oh, it's dead.
Well, yes, but there's still a few people hanging on. The big thing to do in the town, apparently, is go to the high school football games on Friday night.
And some people go to the pool hall.
Well, there are a few businesses left open in downtown.
Yeah.
One of those, there's a pool hall, there's a diner, and there was a third thing.
The theater.
Oh, yes, the theater. They are all owned by the same person. And that person is played by Ben Johnson. He plays that somebody we find out later is named Sam the Lion.
Mm-hmm.
He's sort of the last bit of glue holding this town together. And the pool hall and the diner and the movie theater are hangouts for a lot of the local teenagers. One of those is Sonny Crawford, played by Timothy Bottoms,
mm-hmm.
As well as Dwayne Jackson, played by Jeff Bridges. They're buddies, and their lives are quiet desperation.
Yeah.
Based on what we see in the film, because there is nothing for them to do. Sonny works at the pool hall, as well as being being on the football team, which apparently sucks because the first 20 minutes of the movie has about half a dozen people saying to Sonny, "Why don't you boys learn how to tackle?"
Yeah,
that they're just apparently not very good. But Sonny and Dwayne Jackson, played by Jeff Bridges, are they're dating a couple of girls in town. Dwayne is dating J.C. Farrow, who is played by Sybil Shepherd. J.C. is a princess in the most derogatory term way that term can be used.
She is a princess. Her family, mother and stepdad, are, it seems to be, the only people in town with money.
They
the only ones we meet,
yes,
with money.
Her parents, Lois Farrow is played by Ellen Burstyn. And Gene Farrow is played by Robert Glenn, who's somebody I didn't know and still don't.
Ellen Burstyn was also nominated for Best Supporting Actress in this film, and she was gorgeous.
Yes, she was.
To the place where I was like, that's Ellen Burstyn.
Yeah. Now, The Exorcist was 73?
Yes.
So, must have just been hair and makeup that going both ways.
Yeah, and lighting. And I'm trying to, and this was 3 years before she won the Oscar for Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. That was in 1974. So, but she was in full bombshell mode.
She certainly was.
And Cloris Leachman, let me go back to my page. Cloris Leachman won the Academy Award for this film, mm-hmm. and she was either just about to start playing Phyllis on the Mary Tyler Moore Show or had already been playing Phyllis on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. But that was all part of that era. And Cloris Leachman, she was not in bombshell mode. She was never in bombshell mode, typically. But
no.
She had a dignified, quiet beauty about her in this character.
Yes. She plays Ruth Popper, who is the wife of the high school football coach.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I completely derailed you. Sybil Shepherd was, JC is in, she's a full princess in this movie,
yes.
and her parents have money.
Yes, because they've invested in oil wells and they've hit.
Mm.
So they're one of the few people in town that could be considered wealthy.
Yeah.
And we don't see that many people in this town.
We don't.
The only time we see any crowd is at the football game. But anyway, Ruth Popper, played by Cloris Leachman, is a middle-aged woman who, I don't know why this visit to the doctor upset her so. Maybe it was because her husband, she thought her husband was going to take her, but her husband, the football coach, sends Sonny to drive her to her doctor's appointment. And when she comes out of the doctor's appointment, she's obviously upset.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know why.
Pregnant, not pregnant, can't be pregnant.
Well, perhaps she has started menopause.
Maybe.
But something about this visit has upset her.
Yeah.
And Sonny is friendly to her and talks to her and from that initial encounter, they start a romance.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Sonny has little to no experience with women other than making out with his girlfriend in his truck and feeling her up. And there's a fair amount of casual nudity in this movie.
We do see boobies.
Yes.
And butt cheeks.
Yes. But they start this affair and she blossoms.
Yeah.
Cloris Leachman does, the character, Ruth. She is happy. She's remodeling the bedroom because she's going to do it all in the colors that Sonny likes.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a spark of hope in Ruth once she begins this affair with mm-hmm. Sonny, which it cannot go anywhere.
No.
Because she's at least 20 years older than he is, if not more.
Yeah.
And she's married to the high school coach, the high school football coach. That will cause a huge amount of scandal in this little town.
And
it'll
how
be one
obtuse.
Of the few things they can talk about in this little town.
Yeah, how obtuse is her husband not to know that it's happening? We find out that everybody else does.
He's always working. He's always at the school doing something. He's also the basketball coach. So when football season ends, he's right into coaching basketball.
Yeah.
But there's that, and yes, everybody in town seems to know it. Dwayne and JC are a couple, temporarily, but she's always looking for a greener pasture. And her mom, Lois, doesn't want JC marrying Dwayne because he has no prospects, according to her. And he's just a roughneck,
He's a dead end.
which is, he eventually does go to work at an oil rig. And she's constantly trying to find a husband. Even when she doesn't like the guy that much, she wants to marry him. If he might be somebody that either angers her mother or her mother approves of.
She wants, JC wants drama
Yes.
and excitement,
Yes.
and she's a tease.
She is, and she really doesn't know what she wants because all of her life has been spent in this one little town. She knows she can use her sexuality as a way to get boys to pay attention to her, but as far as, anything past that attention, if they, start to make a move on her, she rebuffs them most of the time. But she's a virgin, which is to her a curse, and she wants to lose her virginity very, very badly. And she makes a very poor choice with whom to lose it to. And this is a movie that's hard to describe the story of because it doesn't really have one.
It's not linear.
It has
There are a bunch of,
events that
yes.
occur, and it has story beats that each of the main characters goes through, and we see their evolution a little, the tiny bit of evolution that they go through. But there's not a story. It's not like there's an antagonist and a protagonist and a line that we follow through the movie. It is basically a series of vignettes that constantly rotates through the main characters of the film. And it's incredibly sad, this film, to me. It's also incredibly fascinating because these assorted characters are looking at either leaving everything they know to escape this little town or staying, living, and dying in this little town.
Like generations before them have done.
And both options are terrifying to some of these people. And some of them don't make a decision. They
And
have it
by,
made for them.
well, yeah, by not making a decision, you've made your decision.
And it's just, it's really interesting watching how some of these characters evolve and others just remain in stasis through the entire 2 hours of the film. That was my main takeaway, is these characters are either fighting stasis or accepting it, one or the other.
To me, the town is its own character. We see, I will call the town her and address her as Annarine. We see Annarine, sort of, I guess, probably Ruth Popper is as good a metaphor for Annarine, Texas, as any of the characters, and Sam the Lion. are as good a metaphors as one can get in the cast for the town of Anarene. Aging past their prime, dying in one case. You know, it's a very old movie, so yeah. I'm not spoiling it by saying that Sam the Lion does not survive the whole film.
His death is a turning point.
His death is a pivot point. We do get a little bit of a through line with him. He takes Sonny and Sam out to a fishing tank, they called it, one day, and they sit there and they're fishing, and Sam the Lion is rolling his own cigarette, and he teaches Sonny how to do this.
Yes.
Lovely habit, but anyway. The movie takes place in the early 1950s, so...
Yeah.
And it's shot in black and white, which yes. was, you know, a purposeful choice to make use of the, you know, the studies in black and white and gray to make it look of the period. Mm-hmm. And I think to make use of the starkness of the colorway there. It could have just as easily been shot in sepia and been effective, but in a different way. It would have been too warm if it had been sepia.
Yeah, this movie's beautifully shot.
Mm-hmm.
And the way some of the scenes are constructed reminded me of Citizen Kane.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got maybe two or three characters in the shot. One of them is very close to the camera.
And the other one's way back in the background.
And they are both in focus.
Yeah.
That requires somebody who knows what they're doing, the lighting people and the cinematographer, to compose that shot in such a way in that it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And some, like you said, the starkness of the black and white
mm-hmm.
kind of... you know, is played out in the town
mm-hmm.
because you have this one rich family and that we know of. And then you have all of these other people. I mean, I guess the football coach and his wife would be considered middle class
yeah.
relative to the oil well people. But
mostly it's blue collar.
Yeah, it's yes, very blue collar. Uh-huh.
Roughnecks and just working people.
Yeah, and also there is we never meet Sonny or Dwayne's parents.
No.
And we have no idea who Billy.
Yeah,
who is played by Sam Bottoms.
Yeah, I called him Sam a minute ago, yeah. but he's Billy.
Which is Timothy Bottoms' brother.
We don't, in real life, we
yeah.
don't know who he belongs to.
Yeah.
He just kind of belongs to the town.
Well, Sam seems to be responsible
yeah.
for him. But, you know, when we first see Billy, he's in the middle of the street sweeping.
Sweeping the dust.
Sweeping up the dust, which is... a job that will never end in this particular little town. And, you know, he never says a word. He's always smiling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, almost always. And, you know, he's friends with...
Sonny,
and Dwayne. And... they treat him well, but we know nothing. Actually, we know nothing about any of them.
We know a little bit about Sam the Lion, which get back to.
But I'm talking about the boys.
No.
We don't know. We never meet their parents. We never see them go home. they go out with their friends drinking, even though they're all still in high school. And I don't guess Billy ever goes to school. And he's referred to by some cruel names.
Of the time. He has special needs.
Yes, he's nonverbal. Would assume he's probably, well, he would be referred to as on the spectrum, you know, autistic or something like that.
I'm thinking a developmental disability.
Yeah. But he's just a sweet kid.
He's a sweet kid.
It's a confounding film in ways because it doesn't look or story-wise, it doesn't progress like pretty much any film you've ever seen.
It's kind of just a slice of life.
Yes.
In this little town.
Yes.
Going back to the fishing trip,
mm-hmm.
Sam takes Sonny and Billy, mm-hmm. I misspoke, out to a fishing tank.
Yes.
They're rolling cigarettes. Billy's off, you know, watching the corks float and bob.
Right.
And Sam has a little bit of monologue where he talks about a girl he loved that he used to bring out to the fishing tank.
Yes.
And Sonny asks, well, you know, why didn't you marry her? And he said, well, she was already married.
Mm-hmm.
Flash forward to close to the end of the film, we learn that that girl was Lois Farrow, mm-hmm. Ellen Burstyn, mm-hmm. JC's mother.
Mm-hmm.
And this is after Sam the Lion, unfortunately, has passed.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn it as, it's a long story, but we learn it as Lois is driving Sonny back from where they have been absconded on the roadside where
He and JC
have eloped. Yeah. She has somehow talked him into eloping.
And then she wants nothing to do with him.
Well, no. Nothing. Well, he's damaged for one thing. He's lost his good eye in that fight that he has with Dwayne.
Yeah.
Even though Dwayne and JC are broken up, mm-hmm. Dwayne still loves her.
Well, Dwayne is still possessive of JC.
Well, he says that he thinks she's the love of his life, and as much as anybody can know at that tender age, she might have been. We don't ever yeah. find out. But yeah, they've gone off and eloped, and then she promptly gets them pulled over by the cops because she loves drama.
Well, no, the cops are sent by her parents to catch them. And bring them home or get them to where the parents can pick them up.
And they insist on an annulment.
Yes.
But anyway, stepdad takes JC and Lois drives Sonny back to town and they stop. They park in front of the pool hall, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about miscellaneous stuff. And he mentions, because Sam has died, and he mentions the story that Sam has told him about the girl he took out to the fishing place. And Lois says, he told you about that? And she says, that was me. I was that girl. And then she looks at Sonny for half a minute, and she's like, nope, gonna let this one go. Because she is a serial seductress.
Yes, she is.
And still very much appearing to be in her prime at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, but she lets Sonny go and...
sort of a catch and release kind of thing.
Catch and release, yeah. But she decides to release.
She also knows about the affair he's having with the football coach.
Oh, yeah. And she says, you know, at that point she says, honey, everybody knows about that. If the coach knows, he has never let on.
No.
So, and it may be, you know, the coach may be thinking, well, you know, it's keeping her distracted and not bothering me. So it may have worked for him in his favor. I don't know. Inside the Mind of a Coach is a very complex web of intrigue and confusion.
Yes.
Anyway, but I was saying the town is kind of its own character.
Mm-hmm.
It is a vessel which contains the stories and lives of these interesting and flawed and ultimately very poignant people.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ensemble cast, but you never see the whole ensemble together.
No.
With the exception of the barn dance scene. But you're still just seeing twos here and there,
yeah,
having little snippets of conversations.
Yeah.
It's a lovely film. It ends after Dwayne and Sonny have had their big fight, where Dwayne busts a bottle and a piece of glass flies into Sonny's face and damages his eye. Sonny is not fit for the draft. And Dwayne is either drafted or volunteers. I don't remember which.
Probably to avoid going to jail over messing, hitting, assaulting Sonny.
Maybe. I don't know.
Although Sonny wasn't going to press charges anyway.
No. But Dwayne is, at the end of the film, Sonny and Dwayne have made up.
Mm-hmm.
Dwayne says, you know, Sonny, why don't you take care of my car while I'm gone? Here's the keys. And Sonny takes Dwayne to the bus station to catch the bus and go off to where he's, going to go to basic training, I guess. No, he's been to basic.
Yeah.
And he's back in town, and he's about to be shipped out.
Yeah, he's getting ready to go to Korea.
Korea. And that's kind of where the film ends, and I think that that is the last really big pivot point. And I imagine what happens later to the town and to the characters, and, you know, I'm convinced in my heart of hearts that Dwayne doesn't come home. But we don't know.
Oh, Dwayne, right.
From Korea.
I was thinking Sonny.
No, Sonny never leaves.
Yeah.
Even
though he acts like he's going to after one of those pivotal moments near the end of the film.
Yeah. It's a bit of a confounding movie.
Mm-hmm.
It totally doesn't seem as long as you said. Mm-mm. Something about 2 hours, but
yeah,
it flies by. Cybill Shepherd makes her film debut here. It's,
yes,
introducing Cybill Shepherd.
Yes.
She has been modeling for some time at this point.
She was 20 years old when they made the movie.
Yes. And it was written somewhere or stated in an interview somewhere that a magazine cover got her noticed by, I think, Bogdanovich's wife, maybe. And she brought her to his attention. But this was her first film role.
Mm-hmm.
She went on to make other movies, some well-received, some clinkers. 14 years later, she's on television in primetime on ABC in Moonlighting with Bruce Willis.
Mm-hmm.
And still gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And still modeling at this point. Shortly after that, she gets a spokesmodel deal for L'Oreal. I remember her doing hair color commercials, for L'Oreal preference, because you're worth it.
Mm-hmm.
During that time period. So that was, Moonlighting was a resurgence for her career.
Yes. She is 73 now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, born in 1950.
In Memphis, Tennessee.
Yes.
And if this is important to you, not that it was to me, you get to see her boobies flashes, just flashes.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of her boobies. It's just she's getting undressed on a dare at the country club pool where she goes with a very awkward, creepy-looking Randy Quaid.
Mm-hmm. Who grew into his creepiness.
Ugh, just so weird. But yeah, this was a stacked deck of people who either were names already or became names. Mm-hmm. Just a delightful cast and excellent performances by everybody. It's a gorgeous film.
It is. It's beautiful. For those that can appreciate a black and white film, a very well shot black and white film, the images are crisp. The borders are you know, clear and defined. Sometimes in older black and white films, it looks a little muddy, but this did not. Now, we watched the director's cut. We rented it from Apple Movies. So it's a little bit longer than the theatrical cut. And the scene on the pool table with Cybill Shepherd and the other guy.
The roughneck.
Yes. That wasn't in the original cut.
Gotcha.
It went, that whole scene was gone, and it just had her being brought home and her saying something, whoever would have thought it would have gone like this or something like that. And there's a couple other little scenes that were added back in. It's not much longer than the original theatrical cut, which was an hour and 118 minutes, so almost 2 hours. It's a little over 2 hours. The director's cut. So what did you think?
Loved it.
Okay.
5 big honkin' last picture show movie theaters from me.
Okay.
We also see a youngish Eileen Brennan, who in black and white, her hair appears to be black. It could have been auburn, but it was really, really dark. And I'm like, holy crap, is that Eileen Brennan? And you're like, yes, it is. I'm like, yes, it is. Again, stacked deck of a cast.
Mm-hmm. In 1998, the Library of Congress selected the film for preservation in the United States National Film Registry. The movie was made for $1.3 million. And it had a box office of 29.1.
Decent.
So, well, it's very good. It was considered both a critical
and a box office hit.
The film had a sequel called Texasville in 1990, based on a 1987 Larry McMurtry novel. Also directed by Peter Bogdanovich. From his own screenplay, but McMurtry did not write the screenplay this time. He helped write the screenplay.
He did. He co-wrote
it. For the Last Picture Show. Jeff Bridges, Cybill Shepherd, Timothy Bottoms, Cloris Leachman, Eileen Brennan, Randy Quaid, and a couple of others from the original cast were in the film.
Reprised their roles.
So it turns out that Dwayne does come home from Korea.
Wouldn't have seen that coming.
But at the time, it was panned as a terrible movie. But now it is being reevaluated and is in many ways thought of to be another American classic. Don't know.
We'll have to find out for our own selves.
Well, that also has been given a 4K restoration by Criterion.
Cool.
It's not available on Apple Movies, so I don't know that it's available for streaming anywhere.
But we can look and see.
Yes,
we can keep looking and seeing. Little bit of trivia: the voice of the radio DJ. The soundtrack for this movie is killer. Mm-hmm. Lots of Hank Williams and other early 50s and prior country artists.
And some rock, pop songs as well.
Pop songs, rockabilly. The soundtrack to this is killer. It's worth the price of admission. The voice of the DJ that we hear is Peter Bogdanovich. What's your rating?
Oh, I give it 5 stars. It's moving and troubling and beautiful and it's just a look at dying Americana. It was dying in 71 when this came out, and it's continuing to die now.
Reminds me of the Hal Ketchum song "Small Town Saturday Night."
Yeah, yeah. But it's a difficult movie to describe because
it surprised me that you picked it. Honestly, it seems like more of a chick flick to me than a dude flick, even with boobies.
I just thought it was interesting that it's gotten this 4K restoration and Cybill Shepherd's in it. And you know, I just thought I'd never seen it. So
me neither.
I thought, well, we should probably fill that hole in our scorecard of movies that we hadn't seen. So,
and we're both glad we did.
Yes.
I could revisit it too.
You were talking about the music earlier. The film features entirely diegetic music, which means it is happening within the scene as opposed to a soundtrack.
Yes.
Including many songs by Hank Williams Sr. and other country and western and 1950s popular music recording artists.
Mm-hmm. Kitty Wells, Joe Stafford, both of them are in here.
Although in the closed captioning, Joe Stafford was
listed as Patsy Cline, which that's egregious and inexcusable. But, you know, the captioner was probably young or something. I have no idea.
Well, and it's like if anybody hears Blue Suede Shoes by Carl Perkins,
they think it's Elvis. No.
You know, so anyway. It's a really good film, and you should invest the money and the time in seeing it. The Last Picture Show, we both liked it a lot.
Oh, gosh.
What else have you been watching, reading, listening to, whatever?
I'll just go with what I've watched, because talking about the books will take too much time, and we can maybe hit that on the next podcast. I finished just last night, way too late, Lessons in Chemistry on Apple TV, starring Brie Larson, Lewis Pullman, and a really strong, good supporting cast, including tiny little role with Beau Bridges. Who knew? So, and now I've got the book on hold because the limited series on Apple TV was so good that I want to read the book now. The book is same title, Lessons in Chemistry by Bonnie Garmus. I've got it on hold. It'll be a while before I get it because everybody else wants to read it now too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the story of fictional character Elizabeth Zott, who is a brilliant female chemist. Her PhD studies go awry when she is sexually assaulted, so she has some PTSD from that, and is an early 1950s feminist before really there was a word for what she was.
Mm-hmm.
Falls in love with the chemist du jour, brilliant wunderkind, played by Lewis Pullman, and drama ensues from their relationship. They're both really awkward socially,
yes.
But they find chemistry and magic in each other, and their lives both take interesting, in some cases, abrupt turns. I don't want to spoil anything, but you quit watching way too early. Also, one night I was feeling the need for a little bit of warm, fuzzy comfort, and on Peacock, with their Hallmark Channel Hub, I watched The Eight Gifts of Hanukkah, which was a very sweet secret admirer kind of love story. All obviously built around the eight nights of Hanukkah. A woman breaks up, is engaged, and that relationship breaks up. She is an eye doctor. Everybody in her circle are, you know, professional people. And she starts receiving gifts from a secret admirer, one for each night of Hanukkah. And the more the nights go on, the more the gifts tell her that this is really someone who gets you, who knows you, and who clearly is completely smitten with you. And she falls in love not knowing who the person is. Person turns out to be not who she expected. Mm-hmm. Surprise, surprise. Mm-hmm. It's a sweet little movie and not your typical no substance fare. It was really good, and it's something that I will add to my rotation in holidays to come. Really, okay. Really good.
Okay.
What about you?
Well, you and I watched The Fall of the House of Usher on Netflix.
Oh my God, so good.
It came out, you know, back before, just before Halloween, and I had fully intended on watching it while we were on vacation, but we never got around to it. But it's on Netflix. It is based on Edgar Allan Poe's various stories and poems. Each episode is called something, called the name of a Poe work,
like The Telltale Heart and The Rue Morgue.
And Goldbug, which I didn't even
Me
know
neither.
Was a thing. But it is this powerful family that is in the pharmaceutical business.
They seem maybe loosely based on the whole Purdue Pharma situation.
The Sacklers.
Yeah, the Sacklers, possibly.
And, well, I think that was a good way to get into this story. By creating a villain of all of these people. The father, played by Bruce Greenwood, is in charge of this pharmaceutical company. His sister,
his twin sister Madeline,
who is played by
Mary McDonald, brilliantly.
Yes, in a role that I quite frankly had never seen her in, and she is very good in it.
She's an evil villainous,
yes,
cold ice point princess queen.
We see flashbacks throughout the film, or throughout the eight episodes, of them as younger people, and the lengths they go to become successful, their poor upbringing, from a mother who was deeply religious, to the point where she wouldn't go see a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Played by Annabeth Gish.
Annabeth Gish in a small role.
Yes. And there are numerous gory, bloody deaths. Bruce Greenwood's character has six children, four of them illegitimate.
Yeah, six children by five mamas.
Yes.
Only one he was married to.
Yes, the beautiful Annabelle Lee.
Yes.
Which is, of course, yet another Poe story.
Mm-hmm.
Or a poem.
Poem.
And the agreement that he and Madeline have come to with a third party about how they are going to become these hugely rich and powerful people comes back to bite them.
Yeah, the question takes place in a bar on New Year's Eve, and bartender says, which would you rather be, rich or famous?
And Madeline is like rich, just like that.
And an entire two generations of people, three generations of people, actually, are affected by this one conversation, this
yes.
one evening.
It is really good. Each episode's about an hour long, and It's very enjoyable if you could handle the gore.
It's Poe with a side of Lovecraft Country.
Well, yeah,
As
you're
far
not
as the
wrong.
twisty surrealness and the gore.
And the gore.
But the gore is necessary for the stories.
Yes. It's really enjoyable.
It's
We both liked it a
brilliant.
lot. So The Fall of the House of Usher on Netflix, if you haven't already watched it.
Also a lot of language, so.
Well, yeah, a lot of language. On Hulu, we watched The Lady Bird Diaries.
So good.
Which is about Lady Bird Johnson, who was the first lady, the wife of President Lyndon B. Johnson. And it's all told from her audio recording diaries. There's lots of archival footage.
Mm-hmm.
There's also stills, and there's some animation of phone conversations that are recreated using the animation.
Mm-hmm. A lot of audio from Lyndon Baines Johnson as well.
Yes.
His conversations and remarks and things.
Because pretty much every conversation he had in the Oval Office was recorded. And after, you know, his library released all that stuff. And you get a very intimate look into their working relationship as well as their personal relationship, because she was a very involved and active first lady.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things you won't know, of course, you know, people my age remember Lady Bird Johnson, but a lot of much younger people have no idea who she is. And with the recent passing of Rosalind Carter,
yeah, it's timely.
You know, you get a look into what is sometimes the power behind the president,
mm-hmm.
which is the first lady. She is his main consultant in many ways.
The thing that struck me was the loving nature of their relationship,
mm-hmm.
and I was not aware that he battled depression,
mm-hmm.
and that is brought to the fore, not to the fore, but it is mentioned prominently that he had some troubles, particularly when Vietnam started to really be an issue in his presidency.
He also had to have gallbladder surgery, which back then
was huge.
Was, you know, you were cut from stem to stern,
mm-hmm.
And it took weeks and weeks to get over that surgery, and he went into a depression after that.
Which is common after surgery.
Yes. So, I mean, it humanizes the most powerful person on the planet,
mm-hmm.
because he didn't want to be president.
He really didn't.
And he didn't want to be vice president, really.
No.
But he did it out of an obligation to the party. And when JFK, whose assassination anniversary is today as we're recording this,
yeah,
60 years ago, he got thrust into this role that he had absolutely no interest in.
Yeah.
So it is a fascinating look at her and her role in his presidency, and him as well.
And them together.
And them together. And the huge events of history that occurred during his presidency.
Yeah, it was a very active window of American culture, the
yeah.
years during which he served.
And if you're the least bit interested in American and presidential history, you'll want to check out The Lady Bird Diaries on Hulu. Now, something you may not really need to watch is The Myth of the Zodiac Killer. It's a two-part documentary series about this guy who says that there was no Zodiac Killer, that the four or five murders...
Mm-hmm.
credited to the Zodiac is were done by different people. And he claims that he can show that these various other people had motives to kill the people who
victim.
Died.
Yeah.
And that, you know, he just knows for certain that the Zodiac is not a single serial killer. He's one of those guys that, like, you know, UFO people and ghost people who claim to have proof and evidence of the existence of those two things, and they don't
They've got
really.
nothing.
And all of his stuff is conjecture. And you're dealing with, you know, 60-year-old murders. And there's, you know, most of the witnesses are dead. What few there were. And most of the police officers are dead. And human memory is a weird thing. Because every time you recall a memory, you're actually rewriting that memory. You're adding little tiny, seemingly insignificant details that then become expounded upon as that memory gets brought back up.
This is why memory is notoriously unreliable.
Correct. So it's eyewitnesses are notoriously unreliable as well. So, and there's little to no forensic evidence left of
Yeah.
these cases. So, you know, it's I watched both parts, and
Meh.
it's middling to, you know, a waste of time.
Yeah.
So somewhere in that range. So anyway, that's on Peacock, The Myth of the Zodiac Killer. Also, we're going to be watching Genie, which has Melissa McCarthy as a genie who helps grant wishes, or who grants wishes to this gentleman whose family has left.
Oh, does this drop today or
I
tomorrow?
think it dropped today.
Ooh.
So, yes, it dropped today.
Yay.
So we'll talk about that next week, but the trailer made us laugh. I'm kind of surprised it's not coming out in theaters. I'm kind of surprised, and at the same time, I'm kind of not surprised. Turns out it was made by a British company for their TV,
Huh. Interesting.
and then it was bought by
America.
Peacock got the rights to show it. So. But anyway, that's called Genie, and it is actually dropped today. So,
Woohoo! Plans.
yes, we plan on watching that. Do you have any idea what you're going to do for next week?
Oh no.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of Comedy Tragedy Marriage. We appreciate it. Please give us a follow and listen over on Spotify. That helps us out a lot, as they are our host for Comedy Tragedy Marriage. If you have a question or suggestion for something for us to watch, tell us the name of the movie and or whatever it is you want us to watch and why you think we should watch it, and send that to comedytragedymarriage@gmail.com. I'm Stan the Movie Man. That's Maud the Movie Broad. Love you.
Love you.
And until next time,
Later.
later.